So first, let me finish what I was didn't explain carefully last time. So I claimed that when you can derive everything you need to know about closed string sector in this Landau-Ginzburg models from the open string sector. And to get the algebra of closed string states, which is called H, one basically computes the Hochschild cohomology of the some CDG algebra A with coefficients in A, okay, and that I show that in case, at least in one variable case, that gives the right algebra, the Jacobi ring. Well, the CDG algebra A was in that case algebra of polynomials, one variable with zero differential and special element W. So it can be extended, of course, to arbitrary number of variables, and you can think also, presumably, of this as a Hochschild cohomology of the category of B brains themselves, rather than, well, because this category is a category of derived category of CDG modules or the CDG algebra. So, but I prefer to take this concrete approach where I have some particular algebra standing here in terms of category. So, now, last, I also claim that you can get this Frobenius structure on this algebra from the open strings. So, that is, we had this open string metric. Trace, if you wish, and I want to like to show how it reduces to the closed string metric. If you take a particular brain, which corresponds to this diagonal in the spectrum of A tensor A opposite. Okay. So remember, so we regard this A tensor A opposite. Well, some CDG algebra with the polynomial algebra just in two variables. Well, just still sticking to the case when there's only one variable here, zero differential in the special element, which is the difference of the potential of two independent variables. Okay. And one can write down, one can realize sort of the diagonal here. Well, A is a module over, CDG module over this, naturally. And one can sort of write a resolution of some, well, twisted resolution of this CDG module using just free modules, namely, one takes just two-term resolution in this twisted sense, which is really a deformation of the Quoschel resolution. Because one twisted differential is this. So it's actually Lev Rozanski who proposed to use this Quoschel resolution instead of this huge bar construction. You can also do it for bar construction, but it's much harder. So and then we just use our formula for the, well, this is a formula for the disk correlator. Well, if I set W to 0, it becomes the Quoschel resolution of the diagonal. It's just one variable case. It's very short. So you can similarly deform multivariable case. Of course, it's going to be substantially longer. But basically, instead of exterior algebras, you get, instead of exterior multiplication, you get this Clifford multiplication. It always works the same way. I already showed that you have many sum of several terms. In general, you can deal with it using Clifford algebras, and that's how it works. Okay, so now I want to compute this disk correlator for this particular brain in the product of two copies of my space. Okay, and that's hopefully going to be the reduced to the usual closed string one-point function for the Jacobi ring. Okay, so I want to extract the closed string Frobenius algebra from the open string non-commutative Frobenius algebra. So the formula for this was the following. So I put some endomorphism phi here. Thank you. in our case, the dimension of the space is 2, so there's a square here, and phi is some endomorphism of the brain, element of the decohomology. And I want to show that it's actually, well, it's up to a factor, numerical factor, is, first of all, let me remind, we already computed the cohomology. It turned out that phi can always be written, in this form. Okay, so up to del bar, up to d closed, up to d exact things, it's always like this. So I might as well take phi to be polynomial a of x times identity. And then I want to show that this one does get Waffle's formula for the closed string one-point function. So, well, just plug in this, and you get the following the factor, numerical factor. So it's this two-dimensional residue because of functions of x and y here. So now I use the same approach as Waffle did. So let's for simplicity assume that W only has non-degenerate critical points. So general case independent analytic continuation coefficients of W. So then we can we can compute it as a sum of critical points. So I remind that. If you have potential with non-degenerate critical points, then this multidimensional residue reduces to the following expression over critical points. So we can just apply to this situation. Okay, and what are the critical points? Well, our superpotential is really this one. Let's say V of XY. So its critical points are just like this, the pairs of critical points of W, right? Not necessarily the same, but you can easily see that if you, in the sum over all critical points, if you're going to sum over pairs of critical points of W, actually the off-diagonal term is going to drop out by properties of residue because, near these points, 1 over x minus y is holomorphic, okay? So you can just separate the two terms and have either W prime of X, which kills you, cancels something here and kills your integral, or W prime of Y, this prime here, sorry. So really, you're left with some over coincident critical points. So. And then, at this point, what is this Jacobian? Yeah, there's a prime there. Yeah, it came from this, taking its derivative of D. So what is the Hessian here? Well, the Hessian, of course, is the Hessian is a product of two second derivatives, two copies, right? That's I'm just doing this. And then this guy becomes another second derivative. Because I'm validating that basically at x equals to y. So these two cancel, and I get the sum like this, which is, again, can be written in Waffle's form. So one gets indeed also the Frobenius structure, just by, well, one gets to reconstruct the whole closed string structure from open strings. Well, I haven't tried actually to do the computation for more variables. Presumably this can be done. Well, this story about B-brains also on Kronecker-Gisbert models suggests some way to construct open closed topological field theories starting in some algebraic way. Okay, so presumably one can start like this. One should start with some algebra, or sheaf of algebras, or maybe some CDG algebra or some infinity algebra, K. And one can consider the derived category of modules over it. Of appropriate sort, okay. And so this is going to be the category of B-brains. And to satisfy, well, the data which enter the definition of open closed topological field theory involve also the space of closed strings. So, and because of these two examples we discussed, it's natural to try to take the Hochschild cohomology of A with coefficients in A as the closed string space of states that at least has the advantage that it does act on appropriate spaces of morphisms. Okay, so we do get, for example, the open-closed maps. Okay, and so one gets all the data in this way, except the inner products, various inner products, like on the space of closed strings and various pairings between spaces of open strings. Okay. So then, in order to make sure that we do get open-closed topological field theory, then one has to, first of all, somehow construct these pairings, okay, or make sure that they exist, okay, and then check the remaining axioms. So the remaining axiom, there's actually only one axiom which has to be checked, the Carvey condition, once you have this generate pairings. Yeah, actually, I thought about your question. I think it's trivially satisfied. An example, for example, for Kronecker-Gisbert, it's satisfied, it's obviously satisfied. It's just equivalent to this fact, well, in my case, it's equivalent to the fact that this map from open to closed is a generalized trace, right? And it's obvious from the formula I wrote down that it is, because it's some super trace of, okay, actually I proved that this is cyclic symmetry. So, and in general, I think it also follows just tautologically, this tautological action, the social cohomology. No, I thought about, I mean, if you don't have any products, we can put it this way. So you want.
Okay, but then there's a condition that the open closed.
Right, yeah. If you don't, you can formulate part of the axioms without you ever mentioning inner products, right? And then you need some appropriate invariant inner products everywhere, okay? So we can sort of put in, so some version of the axiom you want is satisfied tautologically, namely the version that the map from closed strings to open strings is sort of goes to the center. Okay, and then, right, but the joint of course depends on the metric, so you need to worry about the metric. Okay, so, and then the most complicated axiom is the Carvey condition. So it's some version of Hirzebruch-Riemann-Roch, which you have, should be able to prove. And
is it supposed to work both in the A and the B model?
Well, it's sort of abstract, you know, it doesn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Do
yeah.
You expect to get the algebra?
Yeah, the axioms are the same. I don't know really, but I'm saying that one can try to construct.
So all these derivations that you showed us were in the B model, right?
Yeah, but in principle, the axioms should also hold for the A model. It's just there we don't know any algebra A in any category of modules. So the axioms are still supposed to be satisfied, but they don't obviously have the same origin. Of course, it's natural to try to construct, say, the Foucault category by.
So this Foucault side of algebra is not the right one?
Well, they don't have an algebra. We have this category, right?
No, but you have a quiver there, right? So you have a planned
algebra. Oh, sometimes you have. And in special cases, you have some algebra.
You mean,
yeah. In general, you don't have any algebra around. You just have the category of A brains or whatever. So, but there's a funny, well, interesting issue here. Of course, you know, things like serduality and Hirzebruch-Riemann-Roch or whatever hold not only for Kolob-Yau manifolds, right? While this from the physical viewpoint, it's kind of strange because we assume that we have open-closed topological field theory, and axioms then turned out to be some special cases of Hitzebrock, Riemann-Roch, and the third duality. So what's the physical sort of explanation for third duality for general algebraic varieties, say, or for, well, the other models which are not topological field theories, like Landau-Ginzburg orbifolds in general are not topological field theories. And we expect some similar things happening there. So, what is the non-topological version of Cardick conditions, in other words? We still have Hitzebrock, Riemann-Roch.
The one thing that comes in this argument of Calderaro is that in order to run the argument, you actually naturally need the Hochschild homology.
So an interesting project actually is to define some physical theory, some generalization of an open-closed topological field theory, which into which, say, derived category of coherent sheaves on an arbitrary compact complex manifold fits. Okay, because in general, you do have third duality there, but not so in such a trivial manner. You have this dualizing sheaf in general, canonical class, so there is some twisted version of axioms which should have some physical interpretation. Okay, so that's an interesting thing. Well, another thing, of course, in this theory, in general, you'll have, what is going to be the space of closed strings? I don't know. Presumably, there'll be two of them. There'll be one which corresponds to Hochschild cohomology, and then the one which corresponds to maybe cyclic homology or something like that. So they don't coincide in general. So there's no pairing or something like that. So that's interesting to understand that. So physically an interesting, very interesting generalization is to Landau-Ginzburg orbifolds. So why is it interesting? Well, because while Landau-Ginzburg models are not, because Landau-Ginzburg orbifolds are related to Calabi-Yau manifolds, okay? So we have Gepner models, and the simplest one is the quintic. And the corresponding Landau-Ginzburg model is has the following sort of potential, but the space here is not space X here is not a fine space. It's an orbifold of a fine space, where the action of Z mod 5 is diagonal. So, what does this arrow mean? Well, it is believed, it has been more or less proven on the physical level of rigor that conformal field theories for the quintic and for the infrared limit of this Landau-Ginzburg orbifold are actually rely on some one-parameter family, okay? Which is basically the Kähler class of this quintic here. So, you can think of this as a limit of that, and some when you take the Kähler class to negative or something like that. So physically, that's a very interesting model, therefore, this Landau-Ginzburg orbifold. And some of the story that I told you does generalize to Landau-Ginzburg orbifolds, although in somewhat non-trivial way. For example, even in the closed string sector, I don't know of any generalization of, say, Waffle's closed formula for all closed string correlators, even in genus zero. So, on the other hand, the open strings part does seem to generalize nicely because what we have here is a CDG algebra, okay? But also we have action of a group, so we can consider equivariant CDG modules over the CDG algebra. So it's an obvious generalization, and I'll leave it to work out the detailed definition. And once you have that, the natural guess is just to take Hochschild cohomology of that to get closed string space of states. And then if you want to get closed string correlators, maybe the easiest way is to use the same formula that I used for open string correlators, just apply it to this diagonal brain in the product or something like that. So this should, I think, should give the right correlators, both open and closed. So, and in principle, this Landau-Ginzburg method could be useful for computing, say, superpotentials, spacetime superpotentials in Calabi-Yau complication with dbrains, because you know dbrains here should be presumably equivalent to some topological brains here. And we know how to construct lots of them already, because the superponential is just a sum of monomials. And I already explained how to construct brains for the sum, you know, brains for the fact, separate fact monomials. So, and then one can compute the whole superponential, at least order by order, just including both for closed and open string moduli by just turning some using some algebraic machinery. So, actually, for open string moduli, we know the story. It should be say infinity structure is what computes the superponential. I don't understand what happens when you have closed and open moduli. That's how to compute that. That's an interesting question. Incidentally, so this correspondence between conformal field theories, and there's an obvious consequence of it, the correspondence between categories of brains. And that has, it's a well-posed mathematical problem then, right? So to prove that the derived category of coherent sheaves on the quintic or some similar Calabi-Yau is equivalent to the equivariant category of pairs, derived category of pairs, for the Landau-Ginzburg-Korbefeld, the CDG modules. Okay. And actually, Orlov recently proved something very close to this. So I think he almost got, well, he will soon get the statement, precisely this statement, okay, from his approach to this Landau-Ginzburg category as the category of singularity. So, in some sense, it's put in this in a wide class of cases, the Calabi-Yau and Ginzburg correspondence, or rather its categorical version, has been proved. So. Okay. Sorry, C1? Yeah. Actually, he proved something more than that. He proved also something which related to flow, RG flows. That is, he proved. Yeah, so he proved also this result, which seemed to be implied by the RG flow from a non-Calabi-Yau manifold to some Landau-Ginzburg model, or the other way around. Yeah. So it's not, none of this is published, and the result he proves is not precisely what physics predicts. There's some minor modifications, but the general story is that suppose we have a funnel, hypersurface, for example, in some toric variety. Then it flows in general to some, well, the infrared behavior, it has a bunch of vacua. So we have this, say, sigma modulo on X in the ultraviolet, which flows under RG flow to a bunch of vacua. And some of them are massive and some are massless. So the massless one, where there's no trivial CFTL, put a circle there. And it's clear that you can, the category of B-brains is unaffected by this flow, topological category after all. Therefore, the category of B-brains for this CFT should be a full subcategory in the derived category of coherent sheaves there. And that's what he proved in general. And only for C1 equals to 0, you find that they're actually equivalent because there are no massive vacua whatsoever. And also, he proved similar thing for the general type guys, for C1 less than 0. So there, of course, the inclusion is reversed. Okay, you have some of Landau-Ginzburg orbifold, say, flow like this, with a bunch of vacua, and one of them actually corresponds to some general type manifold. And then you expect that the derived category of this manifold now embeds the full subcategory in the Landau-Ginzburg category, and that's, he also proved the result, which comes very close.
He proved that it not only embeds the complement, it's also spanned by finite and many orthogonal objects.
Right, right, yeah. So you can actually, yeah, you can be more detailed about how, what the rest is. Okay, so this part of the story seems to be confirmed by this recent results of Orlov. Okay. So, of course, physics also makes some statements about the Foucault categories of this stuff, or some category of A brains, if you wish, but it's hard to define different pieces here. So. Okay. Now I'm going to switch gears completely. I'm going to talk about A brains instead. So, as I remember, the definition of the category of A brains, or this Foucault category, was pretty awful. It's hard to compute anything. And my opinion, that just means that the definition somehow is the wrong one. And a more basic reason why it's the wrong one is just because it doesn't capture all brains there are. Okay. So, and let me then, so a couple of years ago, in a paper with Orlov, we constructed some supersymmetric A brains, some A brains which are not, which supports not Lagrangian submanifolds, but are instead coisotropic submanifolds with the kind of structure that Nigel mentioned. Yes, because even on the level of K theory, even on the level of K, yeah, on the level of cohomology, they're just different. So you see that the Lagrangians just all live in sort of middle cohomology, while the sort of image of the K theory of these guys lives in general just in different components of the cohomology. So clearly, on the level of K theory, just the category of A brains are bigger. It's actually a precise way to say that it's bigger. K theory is bigger for the category of A brains. Okay. And you can also check it sort of in direct evidence. You know, if we believe in mirror symmetries, you can just look how big the K theory of the direct category of coherent sheaves in some examples. And it depends on trivially on the complex structure. So just look at tori. Already in the well, just easier to do it this way. So on K3s, you can do the same thing, I think. But so on tori, it's the easiest thing. So there's special tori, complex tori, for which the K theory of the derived category of coherent sheaves is so big, it clearly cannot be reproduced by the K theory of the Foucault category. Okay. So in our paper with Orlov, we explain it in detail. So I won't go back to this. So let me instead. So well. There's some guesswork involved, but we sort of know physically what the answer is. We just take the Lagrangian, well, the duals of Lagrangian cycles, and they span some subspace in the, well, the image of the Chern character is effectively what it is, right? Just take the Lagrangian cycles, the Poincaré duals, and they span some subspace in the third cohomology, in the middle cohomology of your torus, okay? And just the size of this, and also lie in the kernel of the wedge multiplication. So they'll lie in the middle one. And also lie in the kernel of wedge multiplication by omega. Okay, because they're all Lagrangian. So just the size of this vector space, which would be called this kernel, that's where the charges sort of A brains take, of the usual Lagrangian A brains takes value, it's sometimes just strictly smaller than the size of the charge lattice, if you wish, charge vector space for B brains. Okay. So forming complexes is not going to change anything. Okay. So forming bound state, if you wish. And actually, one can be more explicit. For tori, we know how this, what behavior of this, how cohomology maps under mirror symmetry. Okay. You can actually see what is the, well, the Chern characters of the B brains take values in the vertical of the Hodge diamond. Okay. And I can check where this vertical goes into under the mirror symmetry for tori at least. And it doesn't at all go to the middle cohomology. It's in principle all over the place. Okay. So I'll write down later the precise condition, which is analog of the condition that the Chern character of B brains lies in the vertical of the Hodge diamond. Okay. So now let me remind then how to. So, although the derivation principle was given 2 years ago, so let me remind how to. In some examples, yes. Yeah, it's trivial in some cases. For tori, it's completely trivial. Sorry? Yeah, for tori, it's trivial that the conformal invariant on the quantum level. I can prove classical, what I'm going to show actually going to prove classical conformal invariance even in curved space, even on a K3 or whatever, call it BO, and just saying that, of course, it's hard to tell whether the okay on the quantum level. Okay, for toroid, there are some examples where it's obvious that there are. So. Well, actually, the same goes for Lagrangian submanifolds, right? Who knows whether Lagrangian submanifold and general Kolobyao defines a conformally invariant boundary condition? Sorry? Yeah. Right. Right. So it's the same question, right? It's on the same level as the usual Lagrangian boundary conditions. It's all questions we can ask. Okay? No, classically it's obvious. I'll show. It's kind of trivial, you know. So no, there's no problem. Let me just show. I'll show one simple example. There are, of course, very simple examples where this mean curvature stuff doesn't arise. Say, the brain wrapping the whole manifold. Okay. Examples of non-Lagrangian brains, easy to construct. Okay. So let me just outline how it goes. Actually, I think it works in general. So I'll give the argument. And actually, the easiest way to maybe do the argument is using this generalized complex structure formalism. Because last night when I was writing this talk, I figured out that actually the computation we did in the paper with Orlov can be rephrased in this language, and then can see the answer much faster. So maybe that explains why generalized complex structure is a useful language for describing these conditions for A brains and B brains. So the idea is, we start with some submanifold and a line bundle on it with a connection. Well, the line bundle is Hermitian and the connection is unitary. I use kind of fine normalization for the curvature. So that the turn curvature is exponential of f instead of some, without any 2 pi i's or anything like that. So on a classical level, one can formulate the boundary conditions for all the fields in the sigma model so that you actually have n equals 1 sort of conformal invariants. Okay. So, and the easiest way to find the conditions for n equals 2 super conformal invariants is just to require the invariant with respect to the R charge. Because of the algebra of the R charge and the supercharges, it's clear that if you have an invariant factor of the R symmetry and n equals 1, you're also going to have n equals 2 superconformal invariants. So this is much faster than actually checking n equals 2 superconformal invariants. So through the computation, it's convenient. So usually, keep in mind what the R charge is. The usual R charge, which is the left moving one, the right moving one, where psi plus and psi minus are just two fermionic sections of the pullback of the tangent bundle to a world shift. Omega is a two form on the tangent bundle, and psi is the sections of the pullback. So. And this. Okay. One usually requires, well, the condition is that J plus J bar on the boundary vanish. So the way people usually write this, the condition of conservation of R charge, or actually, I'll do equivalent thing basically. I'll check that the usual boundary conditions required by n equals 1 superconformal invariants are preserved by R symmetry. Okay. So, and to do the computation, it's convenient to go to the basis. Actually, a pretty standard basis. Like this. And then psi I is just components of the section of the pullback of the tangent bundle to the world shift, and rho I is a component of the section of the cotangent bundle. Okay. And in terms of this new variables, psi and rows. No, I meant also the target space. The target space. So I's and J's, sorry, are actually just, they live in the just the usual real tangent bundle.
I and J live in the tangent bundle
to
Y?
To X.
Y is a subtranspose of X.
Right, and then psi is a section of the pullback of Tx to the Rolchid, right? Okay. So I just lowered the index for this combination to get section of the cotangent bundle. It's just more convenient to work with these variables, and also relation with this generalized complex structure is immediate, as we'll see in a second. And the variation under R symmetry are the following. Okay. So I regard omega as a map from tangent to cotangent, and omega inverse is in the opposite direction. So, or if you wish, you can write this is a matrix. Or you can see the generalized complex structure corresponding to the symplectic form appearing in the formula for the R charge transformation. So so that's for one R charge, sort of the connection which is conserved by my conditions. For the B model, I'd have an opposite sign here, okay, and how they have a different transformation, okay. So
this is the R charge.
Yeah. Now, equivalently, one can just require the boundary conditions to be preserved by the supersymmetry transformation generated by the charge. Okay. So I'm going to take the second viewpoint. So I'm going to now write down the usual n equals 1 superconformal boundary condition and require that it's invariant with respect to this R supersymmetry transformation. The boundary condition, or R charge transformations. The boundary conditions are going to express rho through psi, basically.
So these are variations under R
charge. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so if I did actually the same thing for the B model R charge, I would find the other complex, generalized complex structure here as a matrix. Okay. So these variables are kind of nice because they bring out the relation of generalized complex structure. Now, so what are the boundary conditions, the usual ones? Well, the usual boundary conditions can be restated in terms of psi and rho like this. So psi is supposed to belong to the tangent bundle of y, which is a bundle in Tx, okay? While rho minus f psi, where f is the two-form, this one, real two-form, must belong to the conormal bundle of y. These are the usual boundary conditions. And then you just, you know, require that this be preserved. So this, in other words, this subspace selected by these two conditions in the sum of tangent and cotangent bundle of X restricted to Y be preserved by this, essentially by action of the generalized complex structure. Okay. This makes very clear that this is basically going to be conditioned for something like a generalized complex submanifold. Okay. In fact, if I set F to 0, I'll get precisely what Nigel called a generalized complex submanifold. Okay, because then I would just say that psi is a tangent guy, rho is a conormal, and I preserve the sum of tangent and conormal with action of J. Okay. So let me see. So in general, so what does it imply? These conditions are equivalent, actually, to the following conditions on Y, E, and Nabla, which are close to what Nigel stated. So Y is coisotropic. Second, F restricted to the kernel of Y restricted to Y is 0. So F is flat along the kernel of restriction of omega. And third, Well, here is the following. So in the so we have this y in x as foliation by kernel of omega. Okay, and now this transverse direction. And I'll use the perp sign to denote sort of the form sort of restricted in the transverse directions. So since both so these are this is foliation by the kernel of omega
of y
by the kernel of the restriction of omega to y. So since y is quasiotropic, this distribution of the kernel of omega is actually integrable, so there's a foliation. And then since f vanishes along this kernel, and also omega vanishes topologically along its own kernel, so actually these two forms descend, sort of transfers two forms in normal directions. So I'll denote them omega perp and f perp. And the condition is this one. And actually, so when I talked here some time ago, so it was Dan Fried actually who showed me that that's probably the right generalization. So because we're sort of dealing with the case when y is the whole manifold, and then we just didn't have any foliation, just had everything was transverse, and then Dan said that actually that's a natural generalization, and that's easy to show that that's the case. Okay. So. Now, it's easy to include B field in the story, because physically, only the difference F minus B should enter everywhere. So just replace F by F minus B everywhere, and you're going to get the right answer in the presence of the B field. Okay. On the other hand, if you set after this the curvature F to 0, leave B there, but set F to 0. So then the conditions are going to be precisely the conditions for this generalized complex submanifold in Nigel's sense. Okay. For when F is not 0, you don't get generalized complex submanifold in Nigel's sense. And therefore, let him propose a slight modification of his definition, which does leave precisely that. Okay. And then just restatement of what I said before, so-called a generalized complex brain. Okay. And that's the following thing. So submanifold Y with, I guess physically should have a line bundle with a connection, unitary connection. And let me again F be 1 over 2 pi I lambda squared. And then the definition is going to be the following. We consider a subbundle called, you know, subbundle, say, R in restriction of Tx plus T star X to Y defined as follows. It's, well, it's defined by equation I wrote before. So we have psi and rho, or psi is a section of Tx to y, and the rho is a section of T star x on y. And then the conditions are that psi is within Ty and rho minus f psi is in the conormal bundle to Y. Okay. So we just for any such brain, we define this subbundle of the T star Y, T star X, T star Tx plus T star X. So it's not quite the sum of tangent and conormal. When F is non-zero, this part is different. Okay. When F is zero, it's just the sum of tangent and conormal bundle. And then I require that R is preserved by generalized complex structure, say J, which is some endomorphism of Tx plus T star X. Okay. So tautologically, that gives me the right notion of A brain, because of what I said before. And although I didn't show, it also gives the right notion of B brain, because this condition is really independent, whether dealing with the A brain or B brain or whatever. They're just quite with n equals one supersymmetry. And then just what's different, just this generalized complex structure which enters here. Depends on the which R charge you use. Okay. And let me just state, so you already know what this leads to in the case of A brains. In case of B brains, let me just say what it leads to then. So for B brains, so where this J looks like this. We get that Y is complex submanifold, and that F minus B 0, 2 part, well, B restricted to Y, vanishes. Okay. And what is the condition that, well, that's the condition which you get from this. So.
I thought there was some generalization of the Hermitian
envelope. But that doesn't come from requirement of just Rorschach supersymmetry. Yeah. No, this comes from the condition of space-time supersymmetry.
Space-time.
This is just Rorschach. On the Rorschach, you don't get this, right? Yeah, on the quantum level, of course, you get extra requirements, right? In general. So, okay, and this is, again, a generalized complex brain. And if you set F to 0, you get what Nigel called generalized complex submanifold of a... now, generalized complex manifold is actually a complex manifold with a B field. Okay.
So, in the definition, I'm sorry, you assume again that these are
unbounded. Yeah, yeah, okay. So, let's.
In the A brain, do you need to choose the framing of Y?
Framing? Room by framing? No, no, no. So, that sort of, I guess, demystifies why I was puzzled for a while why this generalized complex submanifold is so similar to A brains and B brains. We can now understand why.
Can you lift this by condition including vacuum?
Yeah, I don't know that. Yeah, this should be a quantum effect, right? In the classical, say, Chern Simons, you don't need any frame. Right? Yeah, everything here is classical. Okay. Although it's not hard to find examples where some of these brains are clearly conformally invariant. Just take some affine subtori in a torus, right? And that's clearly soluble CFT. So. Incidentally, from a physical viewpoint, should be a way to find all these guys just by analyzing space-time supersymmetry, as I just mentioned. An extra special case did appear in your paper with Andy and Marcos and Minasian. Yeah, so a special case of it, because namely for K3s or in dimension 4, you this condition that I stated for F, suppose Y is equal to X, right? So the condition which I stated, which is F omega inverse F is minus omega, is actually equivalent in dimension 4 to the following two conditions. And you did have that. Okay. Now, in higher dimensions, you simply assume that turning on F does not change the dimension of the brain. For K3s, you didn't assume that. So that's why I sort of missed higher dimensional versions of it, which is actually this one. Okay. So I didn't do that. So for K3s, you didn't assume much. You did a complete analysis of this Born infield, and you got, therefore you got everything, including these guys. For higher dimensions, you basically assume that the dimension that when you turn on the gauge field, the dimension of the brain remains sort of the same, right? Although in fact, this, if you have F not equal to zero, then the dimension of the brain is, see, F should be non-degenerate in transverse directions, okay? That's the condition. So if you have any F, there will be some transverse directions. So the dimension of the brain is going to be higher than in the absence of F, okay? For the A case. That's why you didn't get all this full guy in higher dimensions. So I actually didn't check. It would be nice to check that Born infield gives, well, this condition which I already raised for A brains an arbitrary dimension. Of course, it also gives some stability condition on top of that, so. Which is actually also interesting to understand. Very nice to understand what the stability condition is in this case, and should come out just from the analysis of Born infield. And that's related to the fact that I don't know what is the generalization of special Lagrangians to this coisotropic case, okay? So, or in other words, what is the analog of the Maslow class for this coisotropic guys with a transverse symplectic? I know that for toroid they do, so the examples that they do, so same status. So, and if you just write down Born infield and requires supersymmetry, you're going to get both conditions. So the analog of special and the analog of Lagrangian. So that's just the analog of Lagrangian. So, yeah, I don't know. It should be worked out. Okay. So, actually somebody already suggested me some version of Maslow class for these guys, but kind of slipped from my mind, so. Go look for that person again. Okay. Now, one remark, not terribly important maybe here, but actually it is important, that in this case, y is equal to x, these conditions plus the fact that, of course, f is closed and omega is closed, all this together implies that omega inverse F is a complex structure. Okay. Well, the fact that it's almost complex structure is, of course, just this statement. So this square of this is minus 1. The fact that it's complex structure, we've thought for a while that that's true, but then we didn't know how to prove that until Ezra told us about standard way of showing that the ratios of two symplectic forms are complex structures or have vanishing uniform distortion. And the way is to show that omega inverse and F inverse are what's called compatible Poisson structures. If that's true, then priori Hermitian bracket of K with itself vanishes. Okay, and then if K happened to be an almost complex structure tensor, that means it's an integrable complex structure. And that's, therefore, all one has to show is that these guys are compatible Poisson structures. And it took us some time to trace the origin of this theorem, actually, that, this theorem. Okay. Turns out, I think that it was actually Gelfand and Dorfman. Prove that first. It's a simple computation. It turns out that this condition, together with these two, already implies that these guys are compatible. It's a simple argument. So we get in that integrable complex structure that generally in transverse direction is foliation. Okay. So this is the picture that I have Y with some foliation. The transverse directions. In the transverse directions, we have two symplectic forms, omega transverse and F transverse, okay, such that their ratio is an integrable almost complex structure. And actually from this it follows that f plus f perp plus I omega perp is a holomorphic symplectic form. In the transverse directions. So it's, in particular, it has type 2, 0. Now, an outstanding question is, what can we say about higher rank brains? Okay. So, I try to repeat this derivation that I did before, just did for the higher rank brain case. And it seemed, well, there's some technical difficulties. One, there is some extra degrees of freedom on the boundary and that sort of things. And after a while of staring at it, I think this condition is still the right one. Okay, where now F is a two form, well, in the perpendicular direction. Two form with values in the endomorphism bundle. Okay. So, and therefore, when I, you know, this is matrix, matrix multiplication, basically. So, what stands here is just a two form times identity endomorphism. I think that's still the right condition even for higher rank case, even though I'm not completely certain about it still. Okay, what's more certain is the condition of the Chern character, or of the A brain, even in higher rank case. So let me write it out. So I don't think I have time to prove it or to argue it because it's a physical derivation. So let's first recall how to formulate the condition of the Chern character of a B brain that is a say, holomorphic vector bundle or coherent sheaf. So we have the usual complex structure J, and there is an operator on forms, the interior multiplication by J. So first, B brains. Okay. So I want to state in some suggestive form the usual condition that the Chern character is in the vertical of the Hodge diamond. So we have the usual complex structure. On X, which is a 1-1 tensor. And then associated to it, we have an operator of interior multiplication on this 1-1 tensor, which takes forms, just ordinary real forms, two forms of the same degree. Okay. And the usual, Chern character of a brain, D brain, I put B here, satisfies the following condition. Okay.
What do you mean by the Chern character of the B brain?
There's a form, right? So which is, right. It's a trace of.
Multiplying by the square root of A
Okay, so I basically just meant the form. Just the form. This one times just without any square root of a hat, just this one. Sorry, what's
on this on y?
Well, no. It's pushed forward to x. It's a form on x. It's a cohomology class on x.
I lower star.
Yeah. I really thought about. Say resolving everything in terms of say holomorphic vector bundles and just take a finite sum, so it's all everything lives on X. So that's the condition. Okay.
So what is that?
It's interior. Well, we have an operator on forms, so we also have corresponding. Well, behaves nice with respect to the differentials. So we have a corresponding operator on cohomology classes, really. So. I don't think it makes any difference here. Though. I guess it's equivalent. Yeah, if you drive it physically, by the in this condition, j minus j bar on the bound equals to zero, okay, can be rephrased. Like, if you think about it, it's a condition on the boundary, right? But if you draw some, well, if you're sitting the diagram, okay, to interpret it as a condition on the incoming state, like this, right? And then if you rewrite it, it's actually this, but with the square root of a roof genus. Yeah, so I don't think it matters, actually, but there is a condition. You can divide by it if you wish. It's still going to be the same condition. But you do get in it square root of a roof genus. Okay. And if you just flip the sign here and repeat the same derivation, you're going to get the corresponding result for B brains, so that, for A brains. Okay. So there we have J plus. Okay. And the corresponding result for A brains is the following. I'll just write something like that. Where by this I mean the boundary state in the Ramon sector, in the zero mode approximation, actually. Okay, so that's the operator. Okay. Which replaces interior multiplication by this complex structure tensor. Now, what is this thing, actually? Well, it's not something unfamiliar. If you have symplectic manifold or Keller manifold, you have this SL2 action of Lefschetz on forms, right? And the generators E, F, and H wedge this interior multiplication by the inverse by vector. And then there is H is basically a degree minus half the dimension. Maybe there's a minus sign, depends on the convention. So this is just a condition that says some, well, out of its SL2, just leave a look at focus on some abelian subalgebra, okay, and have say that the churn has charge zero respect to it. This is E minus F subalgebra, okay. And you can think about this condition in similar terms. There is a C star action on the cohomology of the complex manifold, and they require this churn to have charge zero. Okay. So, yes, it's really the boundary state is preserved by the preserves the right R current. Okay. So, therefore, I'm fairly certain that, at least on the classical level, I'm not sure about quantum corrections, that's the right condition for higher rank A brains as well, okay, whatever they are.
So Nigel had a condition about the half-left theorem called the
So actually, one can make these two conditions, one can reformulate these two conditions in a way which is related to generalized complex structure using this work of Reutenberg. Okay? Namely, actually, Ezra was asking a relevant question. We discussed it with Ezra, so actually explained to me what Reutenberg was saying, because I was struggling with that. And the point is that one can formulate this integrability of the generalized complex structure by introducing some appropriate bracket on something, and then similar to this Frohlicher-Neuenhuis bracket, and saying that something made of generalized complex structure commutes with itself. Okay, so I won't explain it here. If somebody wants to hear, I can explain later after the talk. So one can relate these conditions to generalized complex structures, namely these two guys. So it is the following. Reutenberg likes to work on this parity reversed tangent bundle of the manifold plus parity reversed cotangent bundle. Okay, plus there's some other thing. The shifted cotangent bundle by two, so it's actually bosonic. This is super manifold. Well, it's a graded manifold, and then you can think of this operation. So you can think of this as sort of differential operators. If you think of coordinates on the fiber of this as called psi i's, with coordinates here as this rho i's. Okay. So you can think about forms as functions here, okay, on this piece. And then ij, for example, for a 1-1 tensor becomes a differential operator. And first order differential operator on this supermanifold TM parity reversed, while this guy becomes a second order differential operator. So the first piece of multiplication, the second piece is a derivative. So, and then, so they have these two differential operators on functions on the on graded manifold, and they have some symbols. These differential operators have symbols, and symbols are functional this whole thing, okay? And you can express generalized complex structure as basically related to the symbols, okay, of these operators. So, for example, the integrability of generalized complex structure is related to the fact that the symbols satisfy some bracket relation. Okay? So there is some relationship here. That is, once you, this is first order, this is second order, but once you pass to symbols, they're both just some functions of the total space of the cotangent bundle. Okay? And actually, this, well, this operator is really this J minus or plus minus J bar in the closed string channel, which I wrote down before. And these two, well, I guess here I had plus, and there I have minus. Okay, so it's basically writing the same thing in terms of forms. Okay. Anyway, so there's some obscure relation with generalized complex structure for these two conditions, which I don't fully understand, but I can explain it. Actually, now, in the remaining like 10, 15 minutes, I'd like to explain, well, so we have very limited understanding of A-brains. We have good understanding only of rank one A-brains. And then I'd like to try to generalize definition of Fourier homology to these guys. Or actually, since I don't like Fourier homology, maybe sort of finding something totally different, which generally is better to this more general A-brains. So let me start first with a naive attempt to generalize Fourier homology directly, which doesn't quite work. So there's this, well, maybe it works if you modify it somehow. So let me, so that's the question of how you commit morphisms in this category of A-brains if it's not the same as Foucault category, if they're non-Lagrangian guys. Okay, so let me first remind how one can regard Fourier homology. Fourier homology for Lagrangians. And we'll try to generalize this formal story to coisotropic A brains. So we consider the space of paths on our manifold X. It has two, some undefined space of paths. I'm not going to be precise about that. It has two projections, the endpoint and the two endpoints, pi initial and pi final. If X is symplectic, there's a natural sort of one form on this path space, we'll call alpha. And the definition of alpha is the following. We have variation of a path, gamma, so the value of alpha on a tangent vector, some point gamma, which is some path also, is the integral of gamma dot del gamma along the path. So I believe that's called transgression or something like that. So from a two-form on X, you can cook a one-form on the path space. Now, what's the exterior derivative of this form, computed formally? Well, it's not closed. Rather, well, integration by parts leads to the conclusion that its derivative is actually pullback from the endpoints, from this, from the base of this projection. Okay. Now, now if we restrict this path space to some subspace of path from a Lagrangian submanifold to another submanifold, another Lagrangian submanifold. So then just get, also get a similar diagram. And of course, because exterior derivative was pullback from of omegas, the alpha on this path, restricted path space is zero. Okay. And therefore, it seems, well, it's not completely unreasonable to ask the question, what is the Deram cohomology, or twisted Deram cohomology of the operator like this on the path space, on the form and path space, it's restricted one. Okay. Now this is all horribly formal. Okay. It's which cohomology? Well, Floyer sort of proposed definition, sort of middle dimensional cohomology of this infinite dimensional space using this formal Morse theory, and that if you just do it formally, you're gonna get some Floyer's definition of Floyer homology. Okay. Now, if you have some vector bundles on Lagrangians, okay, you can just pull them back to the path space and pull back the exponent connections. And if the connections were flat, it doesn't change anything. You just take this two pullback bundles, standard them, and add to the connection this form 2 pi alpha. Okay. And that, if you just repeat the story, you're going to get Floyer homology for brains. That is, taking into account the holonomy of the bundles. Okay. Now let me try to mimic this for quasitropic A brains. So if you just repeat the story for two quasitropic A brains, and actually now I have some line bundles, because I don't know really what's happening for vector bundles. So, well, just mimicking the prescription in the Lagrangian case, you're supposed to take pullback dual of E1 and the corresponding connection, a tensor with pullback of E2 in the corresponding connection, okay? Just mimic what Floyer does and add 2 pi alpha to the connection. Okay. Well, now this is not flat, because alpha wasn't flat. These network connections weren't flat either, because in the quasitropic case, we had some curvature, remember? So let's compute this curvature. Yeah, I mean, so let's take, let's just take pullback dual of E1 and okay. That's not, well, maybe I should have just said, take pullback of the bundles, okay? Take pullbacks of the connection and add 2 pi alpha, okay? Pi 1. Okay, something like that. Okay. Well, any formula makes sense if you understand it correctly, so this is no exception. So, so if we interpret the symbols correctly, that is. So since everything is vague here, so I leave the correct interpretation to your imagination, and just proceed saying that what's the curvature of this? Sorry? Okay, good. Maybe tell me afterwards. So the curvature of this in my physicist convention, where the curvature is Hermitian, or usually the curvature of a Hermitian connection is, well, the curvature of a unitary connection is Hermitian rather than anti-Hermitian, is then this. Okay. So this is not flat, okay? Not zero. Curvature is not zero. Nevertheless, it's flat in very many directions. Because first of all, since you have this pullback from the base, it's certainly flat in the directions that you get if you just keep the endpoints fixed and just vary the path. Okay? So it's not flat only in finite number of directions. Okay. Second, we'll have paths. Remember, y1 and y2 were foliated, right? So the path space is also foliated. Indeed, what's the leaf of the foliation? Well, we just let the the path vary arbitrarily, keeping the endpoints fixed in a particular leaf. Okay. So actually, the whole path space is foliated, and so the leaf is what I said, and this each leaf has finite codimension, just codimension of this leaf here plus codimension of this leaf there. Okay. So, and what are the conditions on this curve? What do we know about omegas and f's? Well, we know that, well, first of all, curvature vanishes if you just keep the endpoints fixed, but also both omega and f are flat along the leaves. Okay, so actually, this connection the define is flat along the leaves of this foliation of the path space. Okay, it's only non-flat in this finite number of transverse directions here and there. So what is it doing in these transverse directions? Well, in the transverse directions, we have this complex structure. Well, there's one here and there's another one there. And as I said, these guys have type 2,0, the symplectic form. In particular, the 0,2 part does vanish. Now, del bar squared is zero in the transverse directions. Okay. While in the directions along the leaves, just the whole connection is flat. Okay. So, therefore, a natural guess for what is the right space of morphism, just to consider formally this mixed Deram-Dolbaugh complex, Deram along the leaves of the foliation, Dolbaugh in the transverse directions, or consider maybe sheaf of sections of this pulled back bundle, which are constant along the leaves and holomorphic in the transverse directions, whichever makes more sense. Well, neither does seem to make any sense. So then you need to maybe use some Morse theory, but there's no Morse theory which would allow you to compute the cohomology of this mixed Deram-Dolbaugh. So I don't know how to make sense of this. Okay. One attempt which I tried is to, at least for tori, could try to replace space of all paths by space of straight paths on a torus. So naive justification is, well, in the topological theory, varying this path is actually barest exact. So why not just contract them to some standard path, say a straight one? Okay. So this gives at least a finite dimensional problem, but unfortunately, it gives always the wrong result. Okay. So that doesn't seem to work without some modifications. Although if you just formally compute what barest variations are for the field in the sigma model, you'll see that what precisely it does. Okay, so the barest charge does seem to be what I said. Okay, the arbitrary motion in along the leaves and sort of motion in the anti-homomorphic directions, the transverse directions. So I'm not sure why. Well, there should be some way to make sense of this. Okay. That was a naive attempt, sort of, to generalize Fleur homology. At least something even more horrible than Fleur homology, because I can't make sense of this. In any way, well, I haven't tried all the ways there are. And another attempt, which is in even more embryonic stage, is the following. So it would be nice to have some underlying algebra. So you could think about A brains algebraically. Okay. And where do we find such an algebra? Why do I think it would be nice to have it? Well, first of all, there's some analogy with B brains. So if you think about, you can think in terms about, say, line bundles in terms of their divisors, modular linear equivalents. And it's a, well, I guess it works for line bundles, but first of all, it's a redundant description of this linear equivalence. And second, you have, it doesn't generalize nicely to higher rank bundles. Okay, situation with A brains seems similar. Have this Lagrangian submanifolds, and their situation is even worse, sort of arbitrary, well, maybe the same thing. Arbitrary Hamiltonian flow leads to exactly the same A brain as far as topological category is concerned. So you have this huge redundancy. And in addition, there are some problems in generalizing this to higher rank bundles. Okay. So, of course, in the B model case, the way out is to have some algebraic definition of a coherent sheaf, or you know, to get more general things. And maybe the same thing works for A brains. And in case of B brains, what we use is some canonical B brain that we always have, the trivial line bundle, which is always there. And sort of regard other brains sort of modules over local endomorphism algebra of this guy. So what's the analog of this? Well, one needs to find some analog of the trivial line bundles for A brains. So Lagrangian ones clearly do not work. They're all non-canonical. They're all equally bad or good or whatever. So one needs to find some thing which makes sense for many examples. And so I'll try to use this generalized, let's call it quasitropic A brains, find such a canonical choice. And of course, since it should be canonical, it should live on the whole manifold. So Y should be X. It's in any way canonical. Okay. And second, we want this condition to be satisfied in some canonical way, if you wish. And so what is the canonical solution? Well, we'd like to have something like that. Okay. So we need a bundle whose curvature is identity times a symplectic form, times this annoying I, which means it's not a unitary connection or anything. Okay. So that's, yeah. Sorry?
In our normalization, it's always a unitary.
Well, if I go to your normalization, it's also peculiar because I have to remove I, right? So anyway, so in addition, this thing, it looks strange because, well, it doesn't make any sense since periods of omega, well, since there's an I here, there's no way it's going to make sense as a finite dimensional vector bundle. Okay, because the omega has non-trivial cohomology class, and here the first Chern class is imaginary, even not even integer, you get the imaginary one. Well, but you can try to realize it if the bundle is infinite dimensional. Okay, if this is infinite dimensional bundle, then there's no problem with Chern class. All these traces just don't exist. And for tori, for example, easy to construct the canonical connection on this canonical, on some canonical bundle related to the metaplectic representation of the structure group of the symplectic manifold, which has this, you know, basically the idea is to take the connection form on a torus to be something like this, okay, where pi is just some constant endomorphism of the metapolectic representation, which satisfy this, because dA is zero, of course, but a squared is not zero. Okay. It has a term proportional to omega. Okay. So there is some natural infinite dimensional bundle, at least on a torus, which has this. So that's
you wanted to solve the equation where you wanted the curvature to be in, if your normalization to be an imaginary.
Yeah.
It's a real class, that normalization. So how is it going to implement dimensions?
Well, I just wrote down explicit. I can write down explicit in a torus, for example. Just take a trivial infinite dimensional vector bundle with a essentially canonical choice of a connection, such that where pi is just some constant endomorphism. I'm just saying that you can't choose some constant endomorphism, which is natural, it transforms as in the sort of section of the cotangent bundle. And in such a the anti-commute like this. Okay. So then you see that F is going to be proportional to omega. Okay. This comes from the A squared piece. Okay. So unfortunately, because of this I, you need to choose some non-unitary representation of it. Well, it's like having imaginary Planck constant, if you wish. If I turn on the B field, the situation would be slightly better. I would also have sort of the real part here. So, okay, this is all in very embryonic stage. So the idea is then to take this infinite dimensional vector bundle whose fiber is the metapoietic representation, basically, or some analytic continuation thereof, and to look at what the algebra of functions is on, what is algebra of endomorphisms is for this bundle in this category of A brains. This I started to compute, and it looks like basically, well, the cohomology of this DG algebra comes out to be algebra of functions on a, basically on a quantum torus. Okay. Well, the differential is some, well, I can write down, I don't have right now the differential. So I'm saying that the Bursty differential, which comes from string theory, leads to cohomology, which is just the algebra of functions basically on the quantum torus. Okay. So I would like to see, well, by construction, you can, for any other A brain, you can consider space HMN, where M is this one brain and N is my fixed brain. And that's going to be my module over the algebra function of the quantum torus. So for every A brain, I have some module over this quantum torus. Now, if I'm lucky, then this module sort of carries enough information about the A brains. You can just maybe replace the category of A brains by some modules over this algebra, maybe on this. I should really work maybe on the chain complex, not on the cohomology. Yeah, I'm using the same. Yeah, I'm using the same idea. Yeah, so I'm using trying to use the same idea. So, under favorable circumstance, this module tells you everything about the brain. Okay. Well, I have no clue so far. So, the general idea is that Lagrangian submanifolds look reminiscent of D modules somehow, holonomic D modules. Okay, and those are, well, if you have holonomic D modules, then you get some Lagrangian submanifold in the cotangent bundle of your base manifold, which is just the characteristic variety. So I'm not sure how to do it here, but first of all, I should remind you that we don't actually have a Lagrangian submanifold canonically, because A-brain is only defined after Hamiltonian flow, okay? So there's no canonical choice, really, these sort of gauge transformations. So presumably one needs to make a choice also to recover a Lagrangian submanifold from a module, okay? Because that's part of Bursty symmetry, varying along the Hamiltonian flow. Okay, so I'll stop here.
Any questions? Correction?
Proofs?
My question is, suppose I have a hypothesis.
Sorry, about what?
Suppose I have a
hypothesis. Well, we know for sure that we don't have to worry about this if you just restrict to line bundles. There are no quasitropic rank one A brains in this situation. I'm less sure about higher rank ones, okay? Because in principle, well, I think it's still true. That is, you don't need to worry in case of hypersurfaces in projective space. Okay.
What about MLM B1 when the first
betting
number is zero?
Yeah, so I think we never have the first. Well, if you somehow be cohomologically trivial, these brains, I think, going to be cohomologically trivial. They are. So there should be nothing, therefore, in the category. There should not be a. Should be some empty generalization case of B1 equals to zero. Okay.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah.
B1 is equal to zero.
Yeah.
Are should be.
I don't think so. Okay. I don't think so.
So
no, sorry. Sorry, take it back. For Calabi-Yau threefolds with B1 equals zero.
Yes.
For K3s, it's not empty. There are brains, actually you wrote them down, this line, even line bundles can exist with this property that I described. So for, you know, for odd dimensional Calabi-Yau's, odd complex dimensional, with B1 equals to zero, this is probably empty, but for threefold it's empty. But for K3s or fourfolds, it's not empty.
But
for,
so, Nigel asked that question once, why do you care if these brains are homologically trivial or not? I mean, I understand that you found them by just looking at extra homology classes, but wouldn't you expect in the category to have objects which are with trivial charges? And
yeah. Yeah. So I'm not sure for physics. I guess this object is not interesting. But
so if the charges are trivial, you won't expect to see those in the category of brains.
No, probably. Yeah, probably expect. Well.
You would have probably expected.
Right. But actually, that's an interesting question.
You
define the rules of the game by trying to find the category of brains and topological setting. Are those?
Yeah.
New objects in the category.
Yeah, I'm not sure actually. I'm not sure.
See, if they are, then I think that's an important distinction between the category of brains and topological things.
Right. Yeah.
And a category category of brains and physical theory.
Yeah, well,
for example, I was trying to draw some picture yesterday where I was saying that K theory is a perfect operator, algebra.
Yeah, it's certainly is part of the problem. Yeah, therefore I'm not sure. I mean, if I don't care, if I just think about topological brains, I see absolutely no reason why.
It seems like it's a lot of risk.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that if I talk about topological brains,
so
I see.
So you've actually it's more complicated.
Yeah.
Well.
Well, I mean, classifying is harder, but then we usually just don't pose this problem, classify all objects in some huge category like derived category, right? So, well, I suspect that also for physical brains it's not possible, right? It's like classifying all minimal submanifolds in a Calabi-Yau, right?
No, that's possible, but maybe saying something about the connected, these brains are related to one another by deformation.
Yeah, but it's,
it might be possible to say something about the connected components.
Right. Yeah, but it's not the same as classifying brains, like classifying topological classes.
Other questions?
Yeah, if you want to share it with me. So suppose we try to have this sort of roughly into any kind of
process.
Yeah. How would you introduce the fact in
time? What? Did you say what? Right, so I actually plan to try to do it for toroid at least to see if it works or not. Okay, for toroid there are no non-trivial instrument effects in the space itself, but if you consider compositions of morphisms and cohomology, there are non-trivial disk instantons. So a check of this idea is just to go and compute the endomorphism, well, composition of morphism for these modules and compare with the composition of that you get in the category of A brains. Okay, that's the most obvious check. Even for elliptic curve, it's non-trivial. Okay, if you look at the elliptic curve. The composition of morphisms have been computed in a paper by Polishuk and Zaslov, and the very nice, interesting formulas there, which involve areas of these various symmetric triangles, symmetric areas of triangles. So, if it's an important check whether this endomorphisms of modules for this algebra, the quantum torus, or some on the, maybe on the chain level, reproduces all these sums. So maybe it just doesn't work. Yeah, you see, somehow quantization comes out by itself. It's like in Fedosov construction of deformation quantization, except because of torus, you can actually do everything, not formally, but you can get actual quantization. Yeah. So hopefully, yeah. So you're saying actually the construction is, if you look at it, it's actually identical to what Fedosov does, okay? So the point is that on the torus, is that you can, canonical choice of symplectic connections, the zero one. That's basically the one I made. So I'm not sure how to generalize it to arbitrary manifolds. There's some arbitrariness of how you choose the symplectic connection similar to Fedosov case.
That doesn't have this feature, that the curvature of the symplectic connection is square root of minus 1 times the simple electric form.
Well, this is I factors, you see. There's some rotation, right? Yeah. There's some analytic problems because of that, so.
Okay, let's thank Anton again.